The Holy Gospel according to St. John, the 13th chapter.
Glory to you, Lord.
Now before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know now what I am doing, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him. And for this reason he said, "Not all of you are clean." After he had washed their feet, had put on his robe, and had returned to the table, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example that you also should do as I have done to you. Very truly, I tell you, servants are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." Now the Son of God has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. If God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and will glorify him at once. Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. This evening we have a special kind of homily. The homily is dedicated to all victims of suicide, of whom Judas Iscariot was one, according to the Gospel of Matthew. If you have been touched by suicide in your life, either a friend or family member, this homily is especially for you. Deb will be playing the role of Judas Iscariot. I will play everything else. Judas Iscariot, son of Simon Iscariot, do you know where you are? It was an ominous voice that came from all directions. Judas rubbed his eyes and then opened them. Before him appeared a tribunal bathed in a dull light. Beyond it, darkness. A lone figure, his face concealed beneath the hood of a gray cloak, sat behind the bench.
"Am I?"
"Yes," the figure said. "You are dead." It was the same voice that addressed him by name a few moments prior, now coming directly from the figure behind the bench. Judas ran two of his fingers slowly across his neck. A burning sensation lingered. The pain you feel from the rope you used to hang yourself will not last forever, the figure said. Of course, other forms of torment will, depending on your sentencing.
Who are you?
I am the accuser.
The accuser? Do you mean Satan?
Yes.
Is this hell?
Almost. This is hell's outer rim. Here is where we conduct our trials, including yours.
My trial? But you're the only one here. And besides, if this was my trial and you are the accuser, how can you be sitting behind the bench? Isn't that where the judge belongs?
I am the judge, and the jury also. In this courtroom, your guilt is presumed. Why else would you be here?
If I am presumed guilty, then why am I being put on trial?
As I said, you are here for your sentencing. Your guilt is beyond question. What we must determine is the degree to which you are guilty. Then you can be punished appropriately. After all, we try to be fair around here.
We?
You are being observed. Is he not? Judas heard murmurs behind him. He turned around swiftly, only to see nothing but pitch black beyond the circle of a dull light that illuminated. What was this? A stage? He turned back to Satan.
So you act as prosecutor, judge, and jury. What about me? Who will come to my defense?
I'm afraid here in hell you're on your own. You'll have to represent yourself. Judas stood silently before the bench.
I guess I have no choice.
Very well. The prosecution would like to call forth our first witness. A young man of about 30 appeared to the right of the bench. He was dressed in fine white linen, a rope cinched around his waist. State your name. I am Matthew, the evangelist. And what is your relationship to the accused? Satan asked. I gathered information pertaining to his betrayal of Jesus after Jesus died, Matthew replied after crossing the tribunal and taking his seat in the witness stand. And what did you find? Oh, he's guilty, Matthew said. He undeniably betrayed Jesus. How so? Satan asked. In my gospel, Matthew replied, I referred to what Judas did in several passages, always using a form of the Greek word parodidenai, which means to betray, or more accurately, to hand someone over. In the case of Judas here, he handed over Jesus, an innocent man, to the religious authorities for execution. All it took was 30 coins of silver.
But I repented.
Yes, you did, Matthew replied as he turned from Satan to Judas. And to be fair, I included that in my account.
And did you tell your audience how I died, what I did?
Yes, Matthew replied. You were so sorry for what you did that you not only repented, you also returned the money you received to the chief priests, and then you committed suicide. You hung yourself.
I felt terrible. I couldn't bear it.
Matthew looked directly into the eyes of Judas. A wave of compassion swept over the evangelist. I never wrote anything bad about you as a person. One day, without any warning, the chief priests approached you. I don't know why they picked you among the 12. You were a loyal disciple. Yet suddenly, inexplicably, you turned. It was a moment of temptation, a weakness. But it was only a moment. That is why I highlighted your remorse afterward. You were a good man, Judas, a good man who made a bad decision. Judas looked down and said nothing. His remorse was obvious. Of course, Matthew continued, Luke, who was writing his gospel at the same time I was writing mine, saw things differently.
He did?
Yes, and that is why I suspect you are here. You see, Luke had access to a different oral tradition than I did. He was told that you kept the money that the chief priests gave you for handing Jesus over to them. I was told that you did not.
What?
According to Luke, you used the money to buy a tract of land. He mentioned it in the addendum he wrote to his gospel, the book of Acts. One day, while plowing the land you purchased, you apparently fell headlong across your plow and your guts spilled out. Your death, as Luke presented it, was not deliberate. It was by accident. I have to say, Judas, Luke thought you were a real scoundrel.
That's not true.
Like I said, Matthew replied, shrugging his shoulders. Luke saw, or at least heard, things differently. Regardless, the fact remains that you handed over Jesus to the chief priests. The four of us, Mark, me, Luke, and John, all agreed on that. And we all used various forms of the Greek word paradidonai to express it, even if we had different views about your character. Matthew paused. Judas looked at him blankly. Is there anything further? Satan asked. That is all, the evangelist replied. You may go, Satan said. The prosecution calls its next witness. Into the light, this time from the left, walked a frail elderly man with white hair cropped short, each of his steps calculated. Slowly, it felt like an eternity. He took his place in the witness stand next to the tribunal. State your name, Satan said. John, the man said quietly. Proceed, Satan said. Was this man guilty of betraying Jesus? Slowly, John turned his gaze from Satan back to the defendant. And as he did, his demeanor changed. Judas, he began, his voice louder now, hands trembling, you were a rotten, rotten thief. I love my brother Matthew, but he was wrong about you. I remember the time in Bethany when you berated Mary for pouring expensive perfume on the feet of Jesus.
That perfume could have been sold and the proceeds given to the poor.
Here you have no one to fool. John replied, gazing beyond Judas at the darkness that stretched out behind him. I knew you were stealing from the common purse, from the small amount of money we shared in our ministry. You didn't care for the poor. You wanted that money for yourself.
I did not.
Oh, yes, you did, John said. It's easy for readers of my gospel to see how natural it was for you to betray Jesus, to hand him over to the religious authorities. I mean, when Jesus hinted at the Last Supper that you would be the one to turn on him, you left immediately, as I wrote in chapter 13, and it was night. A detail I mentioned explicitly to show that you were morally and spiritually in the dark.
Jesus shamed me in front of the others. I had to leave, wouldn't you?
You sold him out, John shouted, standing up halfway in his seat, only to catch himself and then sit down. Your guilt surpassed even that of Pontius Pilate. Satan inspired you. He entered you, John said, folding his arms. Judas stood there, contemplating John's words as he placed his index finger over his lips, inadvertently forming a cross.
Wait a minute. Did you just tell the court that Satan inspired me to hand over Jesus?
I told the world, John boasted. Luke also said that Satan inspired you to hand Jesus over. Judas turned to face Satan, who shifted uneasily in his chair.
If you inspired me to hand over Jesus, then how can I be responsible for his death?
You're not the first person to say the devil made me do it, John intervened, recapturing Judas's attention. Judas now faced John again squarely. The fact is, John explained, that Satan merely confirmed your disposition. Like I said, you are already a thief, a rotten thief. When I told my readers that the devil entered you at the Last Supper, I was simply pointing out that he reinforced what you were already going to do. That's how the devil works. He piggybacks on tendencies we already have.
But Matthew never said I was a thief, and neither he nor Mark mentioned anything about Satan inspiring me to betray Jesus.
I know what I saw in Bethany, John replied. You are a thief, a traitor, and you can't be trusted. Is there anything further? Sainted interjected, seeing the conversation begin to cycle. No, John replied to Satan. That is my testimony. Luke and I agree that you, Satan, inspired Judas to do with greater haste what he would have done anyway. We know nothing furthermore about Judas repenting for what he did or returning the money he received for handing Jesus over to the religious authorities. And while our brother Matthew presents Judas's character and death differently, which is ironic given how much he focuses on judgment throughout the rest of his gospel, all of us, me, Luke, Mark, and Matthew, report using various forms of the Greek word parodidenai, that Judas handed over Jesus to the chief priests, who in turn had him killed. The facts speak for themselves. Judas was a traitor. His name will go down in infamy, and he belongs here with you, Satan, eternally. Good, Satan replied, raising his hands out from under his cloak and rubbing them together as if he was about to devour prey. I've heard enough, he said. Let us determine your sentence.
Wait, I'd like to call a final witness.
You have another witness?
I'd like to call the Apostle Paul to the stand.
Judas could hear the voices behind him murmuring again.
You said you'd try to be fair.
Very well, Satan said begrudgingly. I call the Apostle Paul to the stand. Paul entered the room. He was a short man, mostly bald, and in his mid-60s, the age at which he died of martyrdom. Why have I been summoned? He asked. Paul, Satan said, do you know the name Judas Iscariot? Yes, Paul replied, although I never mentioned him by name in my letters. The closest I came was in reference to the tradition I received concerning the celebration of the Lord's Supper, which merely says that on that night, Jesus was betrayed. So Paul, Satan replied, you agree with the evangelists. Judas was the one who handed Jesus over. Again, Paul said, now seated in the witness stand, I never mentioned Judas specifically, but the implication is pretty obvious. Of course, Paul added, Judas wasn't the only one responsible. I later read in John's account that the chief priests, indeed the whole nation, handed Jesus over to be crucified. Even Pilate played a role. So I'd argue that the whole world handed our Lord over to his death. Well, Satan replied, I can't very well sentence the whole world now, can I? He always hated Paul and his vapid generalizations about the world, indeed, the whole cosmos being under the power of sin. Judas looked at Paul.
Each of the evangelists said I was the one who handed over Jesus. And it's pretty clear that in 1 Corinthians you agree, even if you were just repeating what had been handed down to you. But that, as you just indicated, there were others who participated in his betrayal, even if I was the one to initiate the sequence of events.
That is correct.
Then I have just one question. Can you think of anyone else responsible for handing Jesus over to die?
Paul scratched his head for a moment. Satan didn't like where this was going. Why, yes, Paul replied. Of course. Romans 8:32.
What does it say?
I wrote there that God, quote, did not withhold his own son, but gave him up for us all.
God gave him up?
The murmuring behind Judas returned. Yes, I used the word paradokon.
The past tense of paradidonai.
Yes, Paul replied, literally to hand over. God handed over Jesus to die.
So God is the one who betrayed Jesus Christ.
A hush came over the room. He had to. How else could God identify with the God abandoned? Paul asked. God abandoned himself in Jesus to join us in our afflictions, to become the God of the abandoned and the brother of the damned. This was the only way God could stand with every single forsaken, abandoned human being in history. And obviously, it tore God apart. But it was the only way for God to be with us in our suffering and pain. He had to abandon Christ, not to pay for our sin, but, as I wrote elsewhere, to become sin, to stand with us in our separation from and abandonment by God. Judas was spellbound. How did you die? Paul asked.
I committed suicide. I felt such remorse. It was as if I had been completely abandoned.
God knows what that is like, to experience the feeling of being totally abandoned, Paul said. In that moment, Judas, God was with you. Judas looked at Paul. Tears began to fill his eyes, and the light, focused exclusively up to this point on the courtroom, slowly expanded, first enveloping Paul, then the tribunal, and finally Satan himself. Everything became light. Just then, Judas awoke. The burning sensation that lingered along his neck in the courtroom returned with such intensity that Judas, hanging from a tree, could barely breathe. He gasped for tiny sips of air. Through the same tears that filled his eyes in the courtroom, he saw across a rolling hill covered in grassy stubble three trees with men hanging from them. The one in the middle cried out, "Elohi, Elohi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And with those words, Judas, the God abandoned, was joined by Jesus, the God abandoned, brother of the damned, as both men breathed their last. Amen.